everyone, and welcome to the first ever episode of The Jedi Way here on the Outlaw Nation channel. Yes, it's actually happening. Finally, after weeks and weeks of talking about it, doing a solo show, I realized after doing the Star Wars tournament that there is a co-host I need for this show, and she was very gracious to say yes. For those of you who don't know, my name is John Rocha. I'm a writer, producer, and host here in Outlaw Nation, and please let me introduce to you someone who made a name for herself big time in that Star Wars Schmodown tournament, but someone who also has been hosting a Star Wars podcast for quite some time called the Force Toast Pod. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Laura Kelly. How are you, Laura?
I am amazing. Thank you so much. This is really exciting. I'm really excited that we're finally up and running. This is, yeah. It feels great. This is so cool.
Yeah, I'm excited too. And I'm excited for the fans to kind of get into our love of Star Wars a little bit and discover what we know and then see how much of how we talk about Star Wars, what connects us to Star Wars, connects us to the fans. And for those of you who may be taking a chance on this show, you've never, you don't know exactly how we're approaching Star Wars. This is not a show where we'll be like, well, this week, this is the Star Wars news. This is more a show that will explore the philosophical aspect of Star Wars, the concepts that are brought up in Star Wars, the human emotion of Star Wars, and the journeys of some of the characters of Star Wars. All of that, whatever Laura and I feel like talking about, whatever concept we feel like tackling and exploring, that's what we do here on The Jedi Way. And much love, first of all, to Brian Ward for that incredible opening logo, moving logo, and then much love to Jake Iacovetta, Action Army's Jake Iacovetta, for the graphics down below as well. So great stuff to get into. Laura, let's just start off, since this is our first episode, talking about how we came to Star Wars. Please tell us your experience.
Yeah, so it's my experience always kind of surprises people because I sort of came into Star Wars a lot later than most people think. Mm. So I saw The Phantom Menace in theaters probably in 1999. I feel like it was one of those things where it was like the discount summer movies where I probably saw it a year later and paid like 50 cents for a ticket or something.
Right.
But at the time I probably was like, you know, 11, 12 years old, and it didn't really connect with me at that time. So I really didn't become a hardcore Star Wars fan until like late 2014, early 2015.
Wow.
Okay. And that was when I actually watched all of the movies back to back for the first time. Okay. Yeah. And so what really kind of brought me into it was, strangely enough, a trailer for The Force Awakens. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember the exact circumstances, but I feel like I was at like a football party or something with family. Like, I feel like there were a lot of people around. And there was, you know, I'm not a sports person, so it cut to commercials, and that's when I decided to pay attention. And this, you know, this trailer comes on, the teaser, where it just opens on, you know, this bright open desert, and the voice that was over the teaser kind of just felt like it was speaking directly to me. And it was that weird experience that, and I probably haven't had it since, and I definitely hadn't had it in a long time, where like everything in the room just melted away. Wow. And it was just me and the TV and no one else. And, you know, the voice is like, there has been an awakening. Have you felt it? And it was that, you know, Snoke's growl you hear at the beginning of that trailer. And it was just, you know, this weird thing where something struck a chord. And so from that moment, but leading up to the movie, I sort of spent 2015 catching up, and right. It was starting with the original trilogy and then watching the prequel trilogy and then telling myself I wasn't going to watch the cartoons because cartoons are for kids. And then for some reason, something drew me to Star Wars Rebels. And so I started watching that, but right. And realized that I had missed something and needed to circle back and figure out who this Ahsoka Tano character is. And so then I watched The Clone Wars, and it all just spiraled from there. Wow. Into this really intense love. So I haven't been a Star Wars fan for a lifelong fan. I haven't been a fan for very long, but I've kind of always had a fandom to call home right. Somewhere in geekdom. Harry Potter was a big one for me. Kind of before I really got into Star Wars, and yeah. There's been sort of other little things along the way, but Star Wars has really taken a hold and not let go since in that time, obviously. Yeah. So, you know, okay. It ultimately led me to a really great community online when I really needed to find people to, you know, talk about Star Wars Rebels with, because that's right. Really my biggest love in Star Wars is that show. Right. So I found a community on Twitter and on Reddit, and then, you know, it kind of just it's brought me into a bigger community from there. So it's been a wild, interesting, fast ride.
Wow. Yeah. So it's only been, and I didn't know this about you, by the way. So the last 5 years has been where you've really kind of dived into Star Wars and gotten into it. And by the way, you shouldn't put these disclaimers up to say like, well, I'm a latest, but whenever Star Wars comes to you, it comes to you. And it seems like the fandom that it inspired in you and the way it kind of consumed you to a bit is how it does with everybody. Just as a different age, different time. And whenever you're open to receive it, then you're there. I think it's funny as hell that like when everyone was leaving the room during commercials, here you are walking into the room to watch the commercials and you got sucked in to that trailer. And you did put that trailer on our rundown. We do have a rundown that we're going to go through all the topics and stuff. We're going to talk about 30 to 45 minute show today. But I watched that trailer because you had the YouTube link put on there. And I'll tell you something, Laura, it has been such a long time since I've seen that trailer. And it brought me all the way back to that moment when I first saw it and was so excited about what was to come. There were so many shades of the original trilogy in that trailer. You know, this the feeling that there was this like big new bad villain in the Star Wars universe because Andy Serkis's voice was so prominent and strong throughout that trailer. The way it starts with that quick music cue, and there's Finn there, and then you have Rey and the Millennium Falcon, and this is the trailer before you get that other trailer where they're like, Chewie, we're home. So it was almost like walking back into the fandom again and remembering in 2015 all the expectations and joy that we had after dropping that first trailer. So it's no surprise that that's the one that kind of sucked you in at that time in your life and then led you into all this other fandom as well.
Yeah. And it's fantastic because, Star Wars really is one of those things that it can grab you at any time. And it's fantastic that we are surrounded constantly by a fandom of all ages from all over the place. And it's been really cool. It's really kind of like blossomed into this great thing. And it's nice that, we have the availability of things like Twitter and Reddit to kind of expand, find more fans and find more communities and find more subgroups within the fandom.
Right.
It's kind of crazy. I really enjoy it. And I love the creativity that Star Wars fans bring to the universe. And so it's been a fun ride.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing. The show itself, our show, Jedi Way, the show Laura and I are co-hosting and you're watching right now, is about exploring the concepts of Star Wars, but also from a positive place. Doesn't mean we won't call stuff out that we think might be a bit inappropriate or out of place at this time now when you go back and look at certain things, but we're going to approach it from a way of like of loving the genre, loving the franchise, loving Star Wars overall. So just letting you all know, this is a show that's about celebrating Star Wars and exploring the concepts of Star Wars from that place of appreciation and support for the franchise. I'll answer the question as well myself. I think for me, I was I'm a little bit older than Laura. And so for me, I discovered it through Empire Strikes Back on the big screen. I had seen Star Wars at home on a CBS movie of the week thing, right? And I became so obsessed with it, watching it the first time. I remember crying when Kenobi was killed. I mean, I'm 10 years old, I think, when I'm watching the film for the first time. And so for me, that was kind of like insane that this happened. And it was kind of this feeling of like, oh my gosh, this can exist, this idea that people can die, teachers can die, people who guide you through life can die in a moment like that. And I remember I got a brown bathrobe that I wore for 3 years as a kind of a Jedi robe. I mean, we didn't have much money back then when I was a kid. So like, this is the best we could do. And then my dad, I remember talking my dad into taking me to Empire Strikes Back. And that was where everything put the hook in me, because I was at that age where I'm transitioning into being a young adult male and all those weird feelings are happening for me. And I see Han Solo and I'm like, this is the coolest guy in the world. I mean, more so than Indiana Jones for me at the time, it was Han Solo, the vest, the gun, the way the banter between him and Leia, all of that just kind of sucked me in. Then the Hoth planet, I've always been a fan of snow. And so the Hoth planet kind of sucked me in as well. And then the conversations between father and son, between Luke and Anakin, AKA Darth Vader, that kind of dragged me in too, as a young man who had issues with his father growing up through my teen years. So much of Empire Strikes Back kind of just spoke to me from that place. And the Yoda thing about the guy guiding you into how to live your life and be a better person, I'm kind of an empath. So for me, feeling feelings and feeling other people's feelings around me was something that I kind of likened it to the Force. And so it was like, it wasn't until years later that I understood the connection there, but there were like instinctual things, organic things that with Empire Strikes Back that just kind of put their hooks in me and dragged me along into Jedi and into a fandom. I mean, I bought the dolls. I would get the books, those little Timothy Zahn paperback books. I'd read those like crazy. That was my entry into Star Wars fandom. And then I kind of fell off a little bit. The prequels really didn't help me come back. It wasn't until kind of similar to Laura's situation. It wasn't until the Force Awakens trailer dropped that I rekindled my love for Star Wars. Of course, hosting those shows in 2015, like I did at the time with the Jedi Alliance, Far, Far Away, and then occasional spots on Jedi Council when Christian and them were hosting it, and Mark were hosting it, that kind of helped to rekindle it as well. But it was that trailer that really was like, oh, we're going back to this. This is what I remember. The sand planet. This is the stormtroopers. You know, the big bad villain. All of that was there for me. So that's what dragged me back in. And I've been loving it ever since. Good or bad, I've been loving it ever since.
I love that. I love that we have like a little bit of overlap in that. We obviously are coming from different time periods very much. Yeah. So, but I think that's really cool. And I love that like Han Solo is really like the hook for you. That's awesome. I mean, he's such a cool character, you know, yeah. And he's supposed to be, Han Solo is the swashbuckling space pirate. And it's, you know, it's just fantastic. So that's an amazing story. I love that. That's what, and I love that the trailer for Force Awakens is kind of what hooked you back in too. I think we have that in common with a lot of people in the Star Wars universe where, you know, whether they were big fans of the prequels or if maybe they were a little bit, you know, disenfranchised with them, there was such a long period of time of just nothing, or, you know, where it was Legends books and that was pretty mm-hmm. much all we had. And I think that it's really great when things like that can bring a big community like that together.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know that the Star Wars community existed until I got into this business. Like, I had no idea. I had friends who were Star Wars fans, of course, my nerdy, geeky friends, we would talk about it, but I had no idea that there was these like, you know, rooms and chat rooms and like environments and celebration. I had no idea what Star Wars Celebration was until I got into the sphere here. You know, I had no idea. So having my mind opened and my eyes opened about the possibility and the power of Star Wars and why people love it as much as they do and are emotionally connected to it as strongly as they are, which is so ironic, isn't it, Laura? Because one of Yoda's and one of the Jedi's things or rules is to not be emotionally connected to anything, to kind of exist away from it. But it's tough to do that with something like Star Wars. I'll also throw in real quickly, you know, being the son of immigrants, it was a franchise that I felt a connection to as well with Luke, you know, the idea of looking at the two sons, the idea of something more. You know, my immigrant parents would always tell me, we want you to do better. We came to this country so that you could have a better opportunity to do something in the world. And so there was this feeling since I was born that, you know, I was meant for something else. I felt like I should be bigger. I should achieve for more than what my parents achieved. So there was a connection there as well. Plus fighting the evil empire, you know, this idea of the little guy fighting the evil empire, fighting against the odds to succeed. All of that just are the things that really hooked me into Star Wars as powerfully as it did. You mentioned Force Awakens and Ahsoka Tano. These are two female-led parts of the franchise. Is that for you the hook in as well?
You know, I think that's probably part of it. Okay. When it comes to the sequel trilogy overall, I don't know if Rey being female was really a big draw for me. She's a great character, and I love most of the sequel trilogy. she wasn't really my big draw. Oh, okay. Ahsoka was a huge draw for me, just because I remember seeing, you know, watching the season one finale of Rebels before I had ever watched an episode of Clone Wars was sort of a unique experience, because I had to go from one style of animation to the other, and seeing when you go from what Ahsoka is in Rebels to then seeing her in the Clone Wars film, which of course is where I started, was very jarring. Cause that's a huge design change, but something about that character struck a chord for me, I think, really in that finale of season one of Rebels, where, you know, she's very much like the established, wise sort of mentor character that becomes a sort of savior for the Ghost crew in that show. Knowing sort of where her journey ended up made going through the Clone Wars and some of those early seasons and seeing her as a young child who shows up in the middle of a war in a tube top, it's like, it's completely absurd. And I totally understand kind of where a lot of people were put off by that when the Clone Wars film came out in 2008. But I had something very clear in mind of where she was going to end up. So I sort of knew what the destination was and knew that I had to go back and kind of follow her journey too. Yeah. So I think maybe that was part of it. One of the big draws for me, I think, when it came to Rebels was the fact that I was watching something new that was Star Wars with a community of people. I wasn't playing catch up anymore. Like I was with the films and like I was with the Clone Wars, I was getting to experience this new thing at the same time as everyone else. And that was a big draw for me when it came to really kind of finding my place in the fandom community and you know, making friends essentially, because, you know, you mentioned like when you were first getting back into Star Wars in 2015, you didn't know this fandom existed. I am a child of the internet. I mean, I'm a millennial. So yeah. I was in chat rooms when I was like 11 and 12 years old being like, Xena Warrior Princess is my current fandom. Let's see where all those fans are saying. Totally absurd. But that was kind of where I first found what it was to have a fandom and to be like obsessed with this thing and just need to have an outlet for it. And I found that on the internet with all the other weirdos that were like me. So that was my first instinct, was to immediately seek those people out. But yeah, it's been, like I said, it was interesting. It wasn't necessarily, you know, Rey versus Ahsoka versus any other male character. I think it was just like, let's follow this journey from day one of this character. And it's great because Ahsoka's story is so long. We get so much time with her as opposed to some of these other characters. So that was, I think, a big draw too.
I have to ask you this, Laura, because I see you dancing around it and I'm not sure if you're ready to, but was it something personal in your own, like, cause I revealed that about the Luke's, like, was there something personal about Ahsoka's story that spoke to your own personal story as you went through your life? Was there something that kind of emotionally hooked you in as well? You saw some similarities in her of your own journey?
You know, there's definitely characters in Star Wars that I have that with. I don't necessarily think of Ahsoka that way, although maybe there is something there that I haven't considered. I think one of my biggest ones was Kanan Jarrus in Star Wars Rebels. I think at the time, when I first discovered that show, I was watching Kanan having to sort of force himself to figure out very quickly how to be a mentor. And I think in my role, in my job outside of Star Wars podcasting and talking and tweeting about Star Wars, I was kind of going through the same thing. I had I had gotten my first direct report. I was a manager for the first time.
Wow.
I was having to really figure out the way just by learning, and kind of just based on experiences that I had working with managers in the past. So I was kind of thrown into it without ever having asked for it, which is very much something I think Kanan was going through as well. So I found him to be a very relatable character at the time. And I think that's what really kind of drew me into their story of watching what him and Ezra would go through, because I was sort of seeing a lot of that in my own, just in my own work life.
Did you try doing it blind or no? Was that not you?
That was a surprise. That was one of those things that I was not expecting at all in that season two finale. That was bizarre. And I know I'm grateful to not have to do any of it blind. Not yet anyway. I'm sure as I age, that'll become more of a thing as it often is.
Yeah, true. Well, I loved it too, because, you know, as a fan of samurai films, those are the things that influenced Lucas in creating that. Obviously, we had Flash Gordon, obviously a lot of the concepts, which we'll probably get into a little bit later here in the show. But like this idea of the samurai aspect of it all also spoke to me too. You know, the lightsabers essentially being swords, you know, the idea of in service to the general good versus in service for personal reasons, selfish reasons, using a power to step on a populace and then using a reverse power to destroy someone above them who's trying to, you know, step on them. You know, Seven Samurai has that vibe to it as well. So I love that. So when he gets blinded, it reminded me a lot of, what's his name? The Blind Samurai, that's of legend in Japanese cinema, is very well known. I can't think of it right off the bat, but I've got all this other trivia in my head preparing for Smodown, but I don't have that. But he is a blind samurai who walks and has his adventures. Takeshi Kitano did a version of it. Oh, Zatoichi. That's it. Zatoichi is the blind samurai. And he's done like numerous films. And so when I saw Ken and Jerry, I was like, oh, that's great. That's someone who understands the foundation, or one of the pieces of the foundation of Star Wars, and Dave Filoni, of course, having worked so long with George Lucas and so well with George Lucas, would understand how to throw that in. So I loved that. I loved that aspect of it all. Do the people you work with, are they Star Wars fans at all, by any chance?
You know, I've got a few that are casual fans.
Okay.
And so that's kind of nice. It's one of those things where, you know, most of like my in real life friends and most of my family, just like this, yeah, my Star Wars obsession came out of nowhere for them and they were not prepared. So a lot of them don't, you know, most of them haven't really seen any or all of the movies. So I think that was why really having, I had to put a lot of effort to seek out that community online, right, so that I had people to talk to and I had an outlet.
Was this a bonding thing with you and your sister as well? Because I mean, you co-host the pod with a friend of yours, not your sister, right?
Yeah, my friend Alice and I met doing Star Wars trivia at a bar one night, funny enough, and so that's where our relationship came from in creating Force Toast.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, my sister actually just watched A New Hope with me for the first time a few months ago.
Oh my God.
And so that was really interesting. It's really interesting sitting and watching A New Hope really, yeah, with anyone. I've done this a couple of times with people.
Right.
One time was on like a date where I sat and watched A New Hope with someone who had never seen it before. And I was just like, wow, I never realized like how quiet that movie is at the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm, there's so much time like spent just walking, like two robots walking through the desert. And I'm, yeah, just like, I promise there's more action than this soon. It's like, it's one of those things where it's a really bizarre experience to watch it with someone who hasn't seen it. And I've had the, you know, pleasure of being able to do that a few times now. But yeah, it's fun and it's weird.
So you're the Star Wars sheep of the family. Like no one else is as into it as you are.
Oh yeah. No. And my parents had no idea what to do with me when I was growing up, because this obsessive personality thing has been a thing since I was, you know, since I hit adolescence. And
oh, wow.
I just like, I was a mystery to them. I mean, my brothers are into sports. And they're outdoorsy and I am neither of those things. So it was, I was definitely the mystery box, for a while. Still am probably.
That's not a bad thing. It's not. And that's another reason why Star Wars speaks to so many people, right? Because there are so many different types of characters in Star Wars and they almost always feel like they're out of, the norm, you know. Even look, I know you don't say Ahsoka, but Ahsoka, like she is such an unusual Jedi. And in the end, she breaks from the Jedi in Clone Wars and refuses to be part of the council when they ask her to be part of the council. She walks her own path. So I don't know. I'm just saying, throwing it out.
Yeah,
there.
No, I think it's relatable in terms of like besides Ahsoka, it's even, you know, Luke Skywalker's story too, where so many, right, of the characters in Star Wars are going through the fish out of water.
Yes.
Storyline. And it's really fun to watch. And it's one that's relatable to everyone. You know, maybe, yeah, not everyone ends up being the hero, but everyone can kind of relate, even if it's just your first day of school, to being in a strange new place, in a strange new world, and thrown into something that you were not at all prepared for.
Great point. Well, that was our first part of the show. We wanted to talk about like what got us into Star Wars so that you all who are watching can understand the depth of our fandom and where it all came from, and maybe find some connective tissue and similar experiences that relate to your lives as well. And on the second half of the show, we're going to talk about what keeps us coming back to Star Wars, because there are multiple franchises that exist and have existed for quite some time But there's something very unusual about Star Wars that engenders a kind of, as you just said here, an obsessive fandom almost. And it lures you back in every time for whatever reason. Something pops up and you're like, oh, I'm back in it again. What was it? What are the things for you that lure you back into Star Wars and keep you coming back, Laura?
You know, I think one of the biggest things for me is really the weirdness of Star Wars. And That's awesome. So much of that in Star Wars animation, which is why one of the main reasons I think that was such a draw for me when I finally dove into it is because the animation really was not afraid to just get totally weird. Some people are in it for like the space battles and the hero, and that's all well and good, but any moment that they take to just take the Force and the concept of it to just a weird new corner, I'm fully here for that.
Yeah.
And there are so many great examples of it. And, you know, you can find them in the movies too, but I think animation really, really takes the cake with it and really has found fun new ways to run with it. So that's really my main thing that's sort of brought me, that's kind of kept me interested and keeps me coming back, is whenever there's something new and weird, I'm ready to eat that stuff up. What about you? What brings you back?
For me, it's always as I get older, the way I look at Star Wars, and look, I'm not going to tell you ship numbers or all the species names or the names of all the characters. I'm not going to have those memorized until I compete next year. That's not where I normally go to mentally. What really brings me back to Star Wars, and more than Star Trek, more than Marvel, more than DC, is the philosophical conversations between the characters, right? With Ben and Luke in the first movie, in A New Hope, when they're having these conversations about what the Force is, about how the Force can, and I grew up pretty religious at the time. I'm not a religious person now, more of I believe in universal energy. That's more my thing. And so to me, there's a connection in that, in the conversations about the evolving power of this thing as you get older, the Force itself, right? Sensing that the universe is in everything. And when you explore that even deeper, you can find elements of Taoism in that. I recently started studying Buddhism about a couple of years ago and really found a natural organic connection to it. I didn't walk away from my belief in God or anything like that, but it was more like there's more here. There's an energy here. And for whatever reason, I felt that instinctually in my bones that this was the right place for me to explore. And then when I was doing some research about Star Wars, I saw that there were multiple elements of the Taoism, of Buddhism, and then finding out that George Lucas had studied Buddhism as well as part of this, it really made so much sense about why I keep coming back to this franchise, and I keep coming back to rewatch the movies. And Laura, I'll tell you this, as you get older, rewatching the movies, you get something completely different out of some of those conversations that maybe you gloss over, or you go, I get it, yeah, and move on. You all of a sudden, you'll stand in a conversation or stay in a conversation a little bit longer, and you'll understand what's actually being talked about, what the depth of what they're exploring in their conversations about life. You know, just I was rewatching Empire Strikes Back a little bit before we did the show, and there's some of the scenes with Yoda and Luke, and there's that scene where Luke can't lift the X-wing out of the swamp in Dagobah, and you know, Yoda is not always the nicest guy, but he tells it to you like it is, and he says the reason you can't is he says he can't do it. Like I can't believe it when Yoda elevates the X-wing out of the swamp and rests it on the ground. He says, I can't believe it. He goes, and that is why you fail. And that is like a light, just in that 3-minute exchange, Laura, there are so many life lessons for people who are trying to achieve something in the world. If you don't believe in it, then who's going to believe in it? If you don't believe in you, who's going to believe in you? And those are those things that I come back to all the time that when they're done well, when they're really presented well in scripts, I find such a strong connection to overall. And it's where I think the new trilogy, I think at times fumbled the ball in exploring more of that. Even though I thought Daisy really did an incredible job, I felt like the Luke scene with her in The Rise of Skywalker, that was an awesome scene. I would have loved more of that, more of those kinds of conversations, because that's where I find my connective tissue and foundation of my love for Star Wars now. As a kid, it was Han Solo. Now, as an older man, it is more about like, what are the life lessons here that we can keep coming back to and learning from and exploring at different stages of our lives?
Yeah, I think that's amazing. And that's it's definitely the case when it comes to revisiting franchises and learning new things as you get older. And I haven't really experienced that with Star Wars yet, since I'm still so new to it, but I very much experienced that with Harry Potter. Being a big fan of that franchise and revisiting those books every once in a while, you know, you take away different things and you take away different lessons from them, depending on where you are at that point in your life. And I think that's really awesome. I think, you know, in terms of while we're on the subject of Empire Strikes Back, it's one of those things where I always think about when I'm thinking about weird force stuff, I always think about that as the first example that we got in Star Wars in terms of when the films were released. We have that cave scene on Dagobah,
right,
where Luke has like the sort of weird, you know, force vision in the tree cave, and he duels with Vader and beheads him. And then he's looking at, you know, his own face. Right. And it's one of those things where it was such a cool new thing that they did that was so different than what we got in A New Hope. And they kind of pushed the boundaries and wanted to do something new and dive a little bit into a weirder, deeper place.
Yeah.
And you know, that cave in Dagobah comes back at some point in one of the comics, and Kylo Ren goes there as well, and then actually blows up the tree. But it's a
oh, Kylo.
Yeah, but it's so cool. But it's one of those things where that's kind of the earliest example, I think, of like weird force stuff that we got that we got in Star Wars that I fully appreciate.
Yeah, when you're a kid, you're watching that, you're like, what is this? Whoa, oh wow. As you get older, you understand that is a scene to show you that, you know, that he is like related. It's like a little bit of a foreshadowing that he's related to Vader, which he doesn't know at that point, but also the idea that evil and good exists in you just as easily as you can go be a good person. You can turn to the dark, and you could be Vader. Vader could be you. And that's the lesson there. And when he opens the mask, and it's his anger, his fear that causes him to lash out and behead the Vader. And then when he reveals it's his face, that's like such a mind trip. You're like, oh, wow. And that's what you get when you get old. You're like, oh, I get it now. I get what that's all about. You know, I'm still trying to figure out the daisy snaps and all of that. I'm still trying to figure all that out from Return of the Jedi. But I get the tree. I get the cave. I get the tree cave very, very well. But again, it's those concepts, right, that really kind of bring it back. And the idea of the universe as connective tissue. And as human beings, the power we have to do good or to do evil. And it's all there to explore in the films and in the animated comic books and in the animation series as well.
Agreed. And I'm kind of in the same boat when it comes to the mirror cave in The Last Jedi. The snaps, it goes a little bit over my head too.
Right.
And I still don't fully understand it. I kind of appreciate it, but I still don't fully get it. One of the things that I really did love though about The Last Jedi was the Force explanation scene that Luke and Rey have. It was this really beautiful back to basics explanation. It didn't get weird. It wasn't really deep. It was this thing that needed to be explained. Because I feel like so many people kind of like don't necessarily understand or don't appreciate all the aspects of the Force. And I think it's just it's one of the coolest, weirdest parts of Star Wars that I can just never get enough of. But yeah, the Force, they have definitely been known to take it to a weird place. I'll admit the mirror cave scene is one of those weird places. Yeah.
Well, in the world between worlds, right? You have this, we have this on the rundown. You wrote that down for Rebels. That is something that people thought that Rise of Skywalker was going to explore and possibly dive into, but eventually they didn't. But that was that was a phenomenal part of Rebels.
Oh, 100%. And it's one of those things where when I first watched it, I didn't appreciate it. And I'm sure there maybe there are other people in the same boat. But I think part of that was that I felt like I was reeling from the death of Kanan and Jarrus, which had happened like what in the previous episode or maybe two before that. And I was like, I was not over it yet. And so when they threw this weird curveball at me in The World Between Worlds, I was just like, I reject this. I don't accept it. And it took me a while to kind of come around to it. And I had to go back and rewatch it a few times to really be like, oh, this is that thing that I really love about Star Wars, where they took it and made it weird in so many delightful ways. And The World Between Worlds was a very cool place. And I've had this argument before, actually, with people online, where I would almost argue that, like, The World Between Worlds is one of those things that's kind of on, like, a spectrum. It's not like a black and white area, like, that you have to go through that door on the temple on Lothal to necessarily enter it. Like, I sometimes wonder if things like Rey's vision in Force Awakens is like a weird, not necessarily in The World Between Worlds, but somewhere on that spectrum where she somehow entered that space. Yeah. And so it's one of those things that, you know, it makes Star Wars fun to talk about, because it's this big object and you have to try and figure out how to break it up into something that's like comprehensible.
Right. And that kind of stuff goes back to, you know, the idea of meditation and Taoism and Buddhism, right? People talk about when they get deep into meditation after they've been practicing it for years and years, they slip into an actual trance where they can go off into a world or go out into someplace. And when they come back, it is such an overwhelming experience to conceive of happening, but they call it nirvana, right? That's what you're trying to achieve with meditation, is this state of being of oneness, right? And that what you're talking about there, The World Within Worlds, that could be the trance place. That's possibly nirvana, where you're walking through the possibilities of your life and of the world to the point where you're out of it and in it at the same time. So it's awesome. What are other weird things that bring you back to Star Wars? You mentioned the weird stuff. What other things kind of keep you hooked into it?
Yeah, I mean, so kind of circling back to Star Wars animation, where they really like to take it to weird places. I think it's season 6 of the Clone Wars where Yoda has like a really weird arc, where he goes on a journey of kind of finding Qui-Gon Jinn, who is returned from the nether world of the Force, to sort of guide Yoda on this new journey, and kind of get him to a place where, really, I think what ended up serving him best in his final sort of journey in Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
So we're going to different planets that have like stronger connections to the Force just in of themselves, and seeing new creatures and new aliens and going into, you know, talking about going into trances. I think that's a good part of those, that episode arc, is that he sort of spends his time in that place.
Yeah.
So that there's, if you haven't ever watched those and you like weird Force stuff, like season 6 of the Clone Wars is a little bit weird, but that's, that Yoda arc is kind of where it really peaks. Yeah. And then I think other examples are like the Doom Wolf in Star Wars Rebels. And it was one of those things that was really hard for me to watch, having had such a connection to Kanan. And I think it's hard still for people to watch because they want Kanan to come back as like a Force ghost or something, because that's kind of what you expect of your Jedi characters now. We've all been sort of like trained to think like that. But instead of going that route, which I think would have been an easy route for them to go, you could have brought Freddie Prinze Jr. back in and had him be Force ghost Kanan. They had Kanan's spirit sort of manifest in this animal that then kind of led the ghost crew, mainly Ezra, onto the next step in their journey to move those characters forward. So it was a really cool, new, different way that they took the concept of, you know, something in, that was weird in the Force and just took it in a different direction than anyone really expected. So it's examples like that keep it so interesting to me as a Star Wars fan, and that just keeps me coming back. I walk into the theater at any point and I want to just be weirded out. And I'm looking forward to the day that I get that.
Okay. Fair point. Those are those things that people that make or break Star Wars for some people, right? Like the space whales and the Doom Wolf, as you mentioned, even the Bak-Tu, which I loved, and seeing Doctor Who's Tom Baker voice, that was so awesome.
The Bendu.
Yeah, the Bendu. That's so cool. Those are those things that, like, I watch it and I'm like, damn, my boy, they're going out there, you know. And it challenges me because I'm so much more about, right, like the philosophical foundational stuff, and this is like taking that and going further out with it. And it does challenge me as a viewer to go, okay, what is this? What are they trying to show here? What are they trying to get across to you, right? And the Doom Wolf was certainly such an awesome thing to explore as it was happening. You're like, oh, okay, they're gonna push it out there and just go, this is gutsy. This is really gutsy. And I, you know, and we're trying to stay positive. I wish the movies would take that kind of gutsiness with a logic that makes sense. Do you know what I'm saying? I'd like to see that. So what you say about walking into a theater wanting to get weirded out, you look forward to that, and I do too. And I think it's that feeling of like, well, did they earn the weirdness? Does the weirdness make sense? Or does the weirdness feel put upon to go to the next plot point? And that's where it starts to kind of lose a little bit of its ground. But certainly in Rebels, I felt that almost all the chances they took were fun to go, fun journeys to go on, for sure.
They were. And the World Between Worlds, I remember, was a huge divider at the time.
Yes,
especially that first week that it came out, because you brought the concept of time travel into Star Wars.
Right.
And I think people were really afraid of what that could mean when it comes to things like canon versus legends, and when it comes to continuity, right, in changing things that could potentially affect the future when this whole thing is taking place during the Galactic Civil War, and the movies had moved on from that point. So how does that fully affect things? And I totally get where that fear was coming from, because I was weirded out by the World Between Worlds to a great extent when it first came out too. But it's debates like that, I think, that keep things interesting. Will they ever return to the World Between Worlds and bring it back? Will they use it or abuse it in a way that alters the time continuum of the canon? Yeah. I don't know, but now it's out there, so it's kind of an option. Mm-hmm. But that's the kind of stuff that, you know, keeps it interesting. Maybe it'll lead us eventually to a sort of what if universe.
Yeah.
Using that as a sort of vehicle to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I get it too. People were like, oh, this is a convenient, but they haven't used it. They only used it in that one moment. So, or in that one episode. So it's like, it's there as a possibility down the road, but you know, a franchise will go stale if it just keeps relying on the same concepts. And one of the big reasons people felt like, you know, they didn't get 100% out of the most recent sequel trilogy is they felt like it didn't quite take as many chances in ways that the original trilogy did. And in some ways that the prequel trilogy did, some chances, some bold moves that they felt could have been taken here. And this is not a denigration to anybody who liked the most recent trilogy. It's just more that I think the overall feeling was that you wanted more chances to be taken. And look, I get it. We had Leia Force Ghost. I mean, sorry, Leia, Mary Poppins, Leia, whatever people say. I get that we had some chances that were taken, but you wanted them to feel a little more, they wanted more of a connective tissue to lead you to those weird moments so you'd understand and appreciate it and be blown away by it. The World Within Worlds works if you go back and watch it and watch those episodes again. They're building to that moment, and you can see it happening. So when it happens, yes, it's a lot to take, but it's not just out of the blue, which I thought was good as well.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I think that my main issue with the sequel trilogy wasn't so much, you know, the story choices, although I do have some gripes. Mine was really just the issue of you know, you talk about the connective tissue.
Yeah.
And I have a big problem with the fact that there just kind of was none, that there wasn't a plan from the beginning. Cause I think for a long time, I was one of those people that was arguing like they didn't pay $4 billion and not have a plan. That's insane. but they did, they did do that. So.
Well, but that being said, I mean, we both like Force. I think I can say we both like The Force Awakens as a film. I would say for me, The Last Jedi, After the first half an hour, the rest of the movie is maybe some of the greatest Star Wars I've ever seen. And there are scenes in The Rise of Skywalker that I enjoy in terms of directing-wise, and maybe not necessarily story-wise. So certainly a lot of people do enjoy the trilogy, and so we're not going to denigrate that, but certainly we have our feelings about what worked and what didn't work and the idea of a plan. And that's a fact thing. That's not a debatable thing, in my opinion, is that there really was no plan. And it's very clear that there was no plan. So we're not putting it down in that way.
Yeah. And Force Awakens is for a long time one of my favorite Star Wars films. At this point, the Last Jedi is my second favorite Star Wars film. Wow. I love those two movies. So I love the sequel trilogy to an extent. There are certain parts of The Rise of Skywalker that I love. I love everything that happened with Kylo Ren and Ben Solo. Any moment Adam Driver was on screen, I was fully on board with everything that was happening. So there are definitely components that I love about it, and I can all revisit it over and over because I have to for trivia, and I'll find more things to love. there are some things I don't.
I got a feeling Laura and I, in an upcoming episode, are going to have a Kylo Ren debate for 45 minutes. It's going to be very interesting.
Oh, it's going to happen.
One last thing I want to throw in before we wrap up here. We've been going on almost 45 minutes already, Laura. I also want to talk about real quickly the Jedi Order. That's another thing that brings me back, and it's kind of what inspired me to do the show, because I'd read something like The Jedi Way is this kind of positive approach to the Jedi, and that's what I want the show to be. And the Jedi Order is a piece of that. They talk about there is no emotion, there is peace, there is no ignorance, there is knowledge, there is no passion, there is serenity, there is no chaos, there is harmony, there is no death, there is the Force. You know, it's such a far out concept in a country or in a world that is predominantly believes in an afterlife, that predominantly believes in something more. And maybe those numbers are dropping over the last few years, certainly, but the idea of religion is a very strong concept. This at times, and I've been guilty of it in the past when I was first kind of like talking about Star Wars, people compare the Force to a religion, but it's a philosophy more than a religion. And that's what I run back to over and over again. And you talk about the living Force versus the cosmic Force, that kind of stuff gets involved here too. What do you have to say about the living Force and cosmic Force?
Well, I love that there's, you know, Star Wars does a really good job of connecting the two. Yeah. But I always kind of think about the living Force as kind of like the circle of life. Mm-hmm. So if you think back to The Lion King, where, you know, like everything the light touches in my mind is the living Force. So you've got, you know, from the earth, the grass grows and the antelope eat the grass and the lion eats the antelope and then the lion dies and then it becomes the grass. And that's, for me, that's really kind of the most basic explanation of what the living Force is, and that the fact that there's that balance and there's that tension that has to exist for the cosmic and for the living Force to exist, that sort of connection and that relationship is something that I would love to see explored more. And I was trying to think of the other day about what examples of like weird Force stuff do we get out of the prequel trilogy, and I really couldn't think of anything. Which is kind of strange. I think they were just like more concerned about like, how do we make this pair float? I think they also spent a lot of time with the Jedi Council, and we got to really learn about what exactly that organization did and didn't do that led to the downfall that ultimately led to the Galactic Civil War. And I think that was interesting. It was a fun era to explore, and it worked for some people and it didn't work for others.
Yeah.
But it's still part of the continuity, and you still have to know it and enjoy it and learn how to appreciate it. And I think that's, you know, for me, that was an interesting part of the prequel trilogy. And I know for my co-host Alice on Force Toast, that's the Jedi are her like favorite thing. And the Jedi Council is one of her favorite components of it.
I love the Jedi Council too. And all the interesting decisions they've made through the course of both the Rebels and Clone Wars and in the movies themselves. And if you read some of those novels and read some of the comic books, some of those decisions that are made there and the conversations that are had. And to go back to this Jedi Order thing, the thing I wanted to touch on the most is this idea that it's about reframing how you see the world, right? It's this, there's no, what if there is no emotion? There is peace. And you have to kind of, well, what is the emotion? What am I bringing to the table that is causing the emotion as opposed to the peace? You say there's no ignorance, there is knowledge. Okay, there is knowledge to be had. So there is no ignorance. There's always knowledge there. That's another way to look at it. It's more of a positive way. There's no passion. There is serenity. There's no chaos. There's harmony. There's no death. There is the force. Once again, this idea of removing the idea of consequence or emotion or, you know, pursuing something that can unbalance you emotionally or physically, and instead reframing how you see these things. And it's a challenging concept. You know, this is supposed to happen. So what do I do with that? You know what I'm saying? Where do I take that and turn it into a positive? How do I make this move? And it's a, if you can embrace that concept, and it's a very, very difficult concept to embrace, it takes people years and years to embrace that concept, then I think Star Wars takes on a whole nother level of appreciate, or you can achieve a whole new level of appreciation for Star Wars if you ever find yourself in that place. And I've worked hard personally to kind of, you know, put those concepts in place, put those concepts in motion. The Outlaw, not so much, but certainly John Roca has in trying to figure that out. So I enjoy that as well, about the challenges of the concepts and the philosophies that are presented in this franchise.
Agreed. It definitely keeps it interesting in Star Wars. And the concept of, you know, there's no death, there is the Force.
Yeah.
There's so many different ways that you can take that, is in the many directions you can take in it. It's virtually unlimited in a place like Star Wars. So ultimately, it's just going to be this never ending thing, and we'll get it forever. And that's what's most important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I can't think of a better way for us to end the show, at least this first episode here of The Jedi Way. The time flew by almost an hour here, Laura, 50 minutes, pretty incredible. And this is just a small slice of the huge apple that is Star Wars. And we wanted to talk about it. This show will be happening every 2 weeks here on the Outlaw Nation channel. It'll also be available on the podcast channel, the Outlaw Nation podcast channel, for people to enjoy. So hopefully you guys have enjoyed this first episode, and guys and gals, and let us know what you think down there in the comments section. Remember to give this thing a like as well, this video a like, and to share it on your social media. We'd appreciate that. And the more comments, the more likes you leave, the more shares you do of the show, it'll elevate it in the YouTube algorithm, and maybe it'll put it on people's Star Wars feeds, and they'll click on it and watch Laura and I talking about these concepts. So, and let us know what concepts you'd want to tackle as well in the comment section. You want us to kind of go over and explore and what have you. Nothing is out of the realm of possibility in this show. So I like that it's wide open. It's a, you know, like space, completely wide open. Laura, any final words? And please tell them where they can find you and everything you're doing.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see what people want us to cover in future episodes of this show. So yes, please definitely comment and, you know, shoot us messages on social media and let us know, because we're definitely open to whatever you got. Yeah. I'm on Twitter at @shutup_Laura. That's my Instagram handle as well. I'm much more active on Twitter than I am Instagram, but I'm trying to do better. at posting on Instagram. So find me there. And my other show is the Force Toast Podcast. The handle for that is Force Toast Pod on Twitter.
Yeah. You see it right above her head there, ForceToastPod.com. Go and get involved with her stuff and listen to her get deeper into this with her co-host there on that show as well. You guys know you can follow me at The Roca Says. You see it right down there on Twitter and on Instagram. If you want to be part of the Patreon as well, right above there, patreon.com/JohnRoca. This first episode, I wanted to just be me and Laura talking and getting people, to know us a little bit better and our Star Wars fandom. As the shows progress, people at the $10 and above level on my Patreon, or when we start to do the live shows down the road, the occasional live shows, people donate $10 or more. We will answer their questions on the show, maybe select 3 or 4 questions for us to answer on the tail end of the show. So if you want to get involved in that, please go up there, right up there to patreon.com/JohnRoca, and see the tiers that you can get involved in. So thank you all so much. Remember to subscribe to the channel as well if you're interested in more of the content. Got all kinds of movie content, sports content that Laura isn't going to watch, pro wrestling content, all this stuff that we have here on the channel that I'm very proud of. And of course, Impolite Truths, our political show that we do every other Thursday, to kind of balance out The Jedi Way, is there with me and Dorina Arellano as well. All right, I think that's everything. Thank you all so much for watching this first episode. And please remember to share it and give us your thoughts. Give us your ideas on what you thought of this show, and what you thought of me and Laura and our chemistry and what we got going on. So thank you so much. And we'll talk to you next time on another brand new episode of The Jedi Way.